My grace is sufficient for you, for power. My power implied, power is made perfect in weakness. I'm sure these weren't the words that Paul wanted to hear that day. I'm sure these weren't the words, this wasn't the response that Paul the apostle wanted to hear when he goes to God in prayer, when he goes to God begging for relief, when he goes to God to find answers, when he goes to God in the dark night, when he cannot sleep, asking for grace, asking for deliverance, asking to be relieved of whatever this messenger of Satan is, whatever this thorn in his flesh might be. I'm sure he wanted to get an answer, a positive answer, an answer of relief, an answer of deliverance. But instead he hears these words, my grace is sufficient for you. Why did this happen? What was going on in Paul's life and ministry at the time? What was the condition? What was the thorn in his flesh? Paul began his ministry as a persecutor of the church, not as a Christian, but as someone who was going out to find and to arrest believers, followers of the way of Jesus, to find and to arrest them and to take them back to Jerusalem for trial, to be convinced of their errors and to be brought back into the good standing in the life of the Jewish community. He went to find and arrest Christians in Damascus. And on his way there, Jesus intercepts him, knocks him down, asks, why are you persecuting me? And over a period of time, pretty quickly though, Paul has his eyes first blinded and then opened to see the truth of the gospel, the truth of the good news of Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah, and the Mashiach, and he came to believe in Jesus, whose followers he had been persecuting. And not just to become a believer himself, but then to be called to become an apostle, a teacher, a sent one, one sent to proclaim the good news of Jesus to others. And not just to any others, not to other good Jews, but to Gentiles as well. People who are outside the covenant community, people who have not been part of the Mosaic covenant at all. Paul has been sent to proclaim the good news, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to those who have been marginalized, to those who are outside of the normal channels of God's relation, of the normal channels of God's grace, the normal recipient of the message of Jesus. And this upset some of the early Christians and the early Christian leaders. First of all, they didn't trust Paul. He had been a persecutor. He'd gone around trying to arrest them. He'd been a persecutor of the church. And yet this Paul is now proclaiming the gospel, proclaiming Jesus. They weren't sure, they trusted him. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. This could have been a tactic to try to find out who the leaders were. This could have been a tactic to try to find out where the Christians were hiding so that he could go and he could get them and he could arrest them too. They didn't believe him. And so they began following him throughout his ministry, on his missionary journeys throughout Asia Minor and over into Macedonia and into Greece, going to the churches that he would found in the towns of the Gentiles that he would found. And he would say, they would say to these Gentiles, it's a good thing that you're now a Christian. It's a good thing that you now follow Jesus. It's a good thing that you're part of our covenant community. But now, Paul didn't tell you everything. In order to really be a Christian, in order to really follow Jesus, you have to be a Jew too. Why? Because Christianity was a sect of Judaism, a denomination of Judaism. And you couldn't be a Christian in that early stage without first being a Jew. So, men, you're going to have to get circumcised. And you're going to start have to following all of the Jewish regulations, the dietary regulations, the blood purity laws, clothing practices, Sabbath day keeping. You're going to have to start following all the high holy days of the Hebraic faith. Paul didn't tell you that, did he? So you can't trust him. You can't trust him to tell you everything. And Paul gets wind of this. He writes in his letter to the Galatians about this problem. We see it happening in the book of the Acts of the Apostles. And we see here in 2 Corinthians, Paul addressing it. Addressing those who were insulting him and following him. And casting aspersions on his ministry. And sowing seeds of doubt amongst believers. Amongst these young Christians. Seeds of doubt as to whether or not they could really be part of the Christian community. And those seeds of doubt not only affected those people who were converted, these Gentiles who'd become Christians, it also affected him. And he started to question his own ministry. We see this several places in what he writes. He's questioning his own salvation. He's questioning his own walk with Christ. He's questioning his own position. And could he ever be forgiven for what he had done in persecuting the church? Could he ever be forgiven for having sought out believers to arrest them and take them back to Jerusalem from Damascus? Could he ever be forgiven for having persecuted Christians, for standing there and having the coats of those who stoned Stephen laid at his feet? Could he ever be forgiven? These questions ricocheted around in his mind. And he describes it as a thorn in his flesh, a messenger of Satan. The Greek word messenger, agalos, is the word angel. We get the word angel from it. A messenger of Satan. The other word for that is demon. In his head, in his mind at night. I'm sure he lay there and he wondered, could he ever overcome his past? The things that he had done, that he was ashamed of now. Could he ever overcome it and be forgiven by Christ? Could his ministry bear fruit amongst the Gentiles? Or will he always be persistently pursued by those who said, you can't trust Paul? He began to not trust himself. And so he goes to Jesus late at night and he prays to God to relieve him of this thorn in the flesh, of these doubts, of these fears of inadequacy, of these doubts of his own salvation, of these doubts of God's grace. He goes and he begs for it to be relieved. Three times, it says, he begs for relief. And the words that he hears from Jesus are riveting. My grace is sufficient. It's enough. It is enough for you. My grace is sufficient for you. For power. And some of the copies of it down through the centuries have said, my power. For power, my power, God's power. The word power, dunamis in Greek, is the word from which we get the word dynamite. Wow. My power is made perfect, complete, whole in weakness, in your weakness. What a more amazing proclamation to be made about the power of God to change us, to transform us, to deliver us, and to forgive us than to take the greatest persecutor of the early church and transform him into the greatest apostle of the early church. And that's exactly what happened. My grace is sufficient for you, Jesus said to Paul. For my power is made perfect in your weakness. What thorn in the flesh do you have? What doubt may you have today about God's love for you? About what you may have done in the past for which you may fear you'll never be forgiven? We all have those kinds of thorns, those kinds of doubts, those kinds of concerns. We all have those kinds of fears. And they plague us. Sometimes we don't admit it to ourselves, much less to others. But they're there. My grace is sufficient for you, are the words that we hear in those moments. What are the thorns that plague you today? What messengers of Satan whisper in your ear? I've had them whispering in my ears throughout my life. They sometimes yell at me with placards that say, God hates fags. When I was young, my family discovered that I was gay. They sent me off in 1982. This was not a problem. This was actually in accord with Bright Practice. They sent me off to reparative therapy, to an Exodus International program, to get fixed for being gay. Of course, it didn't work. The American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association today knows that this doesn't work. This therapy is torture. It's not valid therapy. But I went through it because I was told that I was broken and that I needed to be fixed. And even though I came to believe that that was false, that was not true, it is still true throughout my life and to today that there are times that in the back of my head I question. I married my husband on October the 1st of 2022. A week later, I was called in on a complaint before the bishop of the North Texas Conference for getting married. And in my heart and in my soul, those doubts crept up, and I heard the voice of those, the messengers of Satan, those who told me that I was worthless. Those thorns in the flesh still remain. And in that moment, I had to realize that God's grace was sufficient for me. God's grace is sufficient for us all. God's grace is sufficient for us all, and our weakness, no matter how great the weakness may be, God's grace is sufficient, and our weakness is the field in which God's power may grow and reach out and touch and change so many lives. Where are the thorns in your life? Where are the messengers of Satan in your life, sowing seeds of doubt, seeds of unnecessary, ridiculous, perverted guilt? Where are the voice of the evil one in your life speaking? Where are the thorns in your flesh, in your mind, in your soul? We all have them. Those doubts and those fears. Hear the good news. That's what the word gospel means, good news. Hear the good news of Jesus. My grace, Jesus says, is sufficient for you. Hear that. Believe that. Act on that message. My grace is sufficient for you. for power. God's power is made complete, made whole, made perfect in weakness. May we truly be open to the power of God in our lives. May this church be truly open to the power of God in its life, that as it proclaims the good news of the grace of God to all and welcomes and embraces all into the family of faith, may it also hear those words and proclaim those words and live those words in actions of justice and mercy and grace and peace to and for and with all. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. May God's peace.